Galloway and Company on 1033ESPN.com.
It's a Galloway Company, the 4 o'clock hour at Moose Zone. Moose Zone in a hurry. Ian's here. Matt Moses returned from the West Coast. He's also here. We bring in a man of many sources. And they deliver news, good and bad, at Valley Ranch. Let's see if he's got any good news at the moment from Valley Ranch, from any of his sources. You see him on TV? You like the way he looks, admit it. Mustache a little shaky, but overall facial features, I would say, right up there with an A-minus, at least. The one and only, Ed Werder. Hi, Ed.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, Ed. Don't know about the facial features.
We're doing good, man.
I don't know about the A-minus. I mean, it sounds like he's grading Jerry Jones' drafts or something.
Oh, Ed. I don't understand that. I thought Ed had a good point the other day. And this was yesterday, I think, and I agree with this. If you are the head coach, that's your title, of the Cowboys, and you don't think, and this was based on Wade Phillips' press conference yesterday, and you're going to be at that press conference and you don't agree with how many times the team ran the ball, no matter whether you're right or wrong, you don't agree with it, then the head coach has to do what, Ed Werder?
Well, I think the head coach should recognize that earlier in the game and do something about it if it's within his control. And I guess technically we don't know if it is or if Jason Garrett has complete autonomy as a Cowboys offensive play caller and assistant head coach.
So if the head coach is unhappy, you're saying the head coach should go to the offensive coordinator and say, hey, we got three downs right here. I want you to run the ball all three downs.
I'm saying that the head coach should not be announcing on Monday following a defeat that he's unhappy with the number of times the offensive coordinator called running plays if he was in a position to influence the calls throughout the course of the four-hour game the day before and did nothing about it.
Yeah. Okay. I thought that made sense. Mosley, you look confused.
No, I think what Ed's saying makes sense for sure.
Okay.
I mean, at some point, just step over there. He's about, 10 feet away from Red Jesus and say...
If that's what you think, if you're the head coach.
If you're the head coach. Because if you don't say it, then, Randy, you've complained about some cheap second guesses so far on this show. Then what Wade did was a cheap second guess.
I would say then, Ed Werder, I don't like to make this point a lot, but I have to make it. I think Mosley just had a good point.
I missed it. What was it?
Okay, I know it went right by you, right?
Sorry, Mosley.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I think that. I've talked to people around the league during the course of the season, and I've asked them what their perception of Jason Garrett as a play caller is, and I can tell you that there are a lot of teams who believe that he wants to throw the ball, that as a former quarterback, that's what he personally always wanted to do when he was playing, and he has a guy throwing the ball for him now that he has a lot of faith in Tony Romo, and that they can be very easily discouraged in terms of running the ball, that if they don't get good results early on, that Jason Garrett is sometimes prone to become exclusively committed to throwing the football. And I guess you could argue that's what happened to a degree the other day, because you're in a 3-0 game in the fourth quarter, and Marion Barber, Tashard Choice, and Felix Jones each get one carry the entire second half. I mean, that is hard to explain. But
the other team did have the ball 12 minutes in the third quarter.
Well, part of the reason they have the other ball for 12 minutes is because you do nothing with it when you have it. Because they have this funny rule in the NFL that if you don't advance the ball 10 yards, they take it away. They make you give it to the other team. Unless you're Bill Belichick, then you get to try and keep it one more play.
Well, I guess so. But if the other team is keeping the ball 9 minutes on a possession, and you are in a situation, and by the way, that made it 10-0, that one possession. which did things change things a little bit. But, I mean, the play calling is something you can second guess. But if Jason Garrett wants the ball in the hands of his best offensive player, and whether we like it or not, Romo's his best offensive player, is there any argument with that? Then what head coach around here doesn't want the ball in the hands of his best offensive player, including the great Bill Belichick? And we saw that weirdness. And I thought stupidity or arrogance or whatever you want to call it of Sunday night.
And I hope I'm not contradicting myself here, and maybe I am, but I think the same rule applies to the Patriots' decision as to the Cowboys' game plan. And then the Patriots' controversial decision that Belichick made in the fourth quarter of that game, it was he didn't trust his defense because during the course of the game and the way it played out, they had lost his faith. Based on the fact that Manning was going up and down the field on him. That's why he didn't trust him. And the same then has to be said for the Cowboys. If they're going to run the football, they have to do it effectively enough when they have the opportunity that Jason Garrett believes is going to be successful. And I've gone through the play-by-play, as I heard you suggest earlier in the day, and the Cowboys ran, on their first three running plays, Marion Barber ran for 13, 7, and 5 yards. Then Mark Colombo got hurt. With Colombo out of the game, their next six runs netted 5 total yards.
In other words, they were wiped out by the other team. And on that first possession, the running game helped what should have been a touchdown, giving the Cowboys a touchdown. And Romo just flat doesn't hit. He doesn't hit Miles Austin inside the 5-yard line, and he would have scored. Now, some people call that a drop. I don't. I thought that was Romo throwing it too high.
Well, I thought Miles lost it in the lights as well.
Yeah. Well, I didn't ask Miles.
Maybe they weren't on that early in the game. Must have been something else.
Yeah.
The other thing I think that caused them trouble offensively, and maybe this is more to the point of what happened to the running game, is that they were just completely ineffective on first down, almost regardless of whether they ran the ball or threw it. I think they had 5 runs for 20 yards, including that.
That's why I was saying, please check the – just check the play-by-play, because first down seems to always dictate what you're going to do next. And, boy, they had some awful first downs.
They did it. Not only when they ran the ball, but when they threw the ball, Roman was only 3 for 5, took a sack, and then he hit the big play to Roy Williams, who turned the ball over to Charles Woodson on the fumble. So if you're not gaining yards on first down, you're not going to have the opportunity to run the ball on second down. And then if you're not effective on second down, obviously you've got all kinds of issues on third down. So, and I think that's what happened to the Cowboys. They started 0-for-7 on third down, and it all started because they were so poor in their execution on first down, regardless of whether they threw it or ran for it.
This team, now we know Colombo's out, and that ain't good. This team has got opponents at home they absolutely have to beat. Speaking of desperate, now the Cowboys become desperate against subpar teams. Where does this go from here, Ed? Your best guess.
If I'm desperate, I'd love nothing more than to play a couple of 2- and 3-win teams at home, teams that have really nothing much to play for. Now, you can argue that the Raiders beat the Eagles, who gave the Cowboys a game, and the Redskins are coming off a victory against the Broncos, who beat Dallas. But in both those instances, those teams are playing at home, so the Cowboys are going to have a considerable advantage over both the Redskins and the Raiders, playing them at Jerry World. And the Raiders, in effect, have a very short, you know, time to get ready and travel, and that only increases the difficulty for a bad team to begin with. So if the Cowboys are any kind of team, they blow both these teams out. They get their second bye of the season, and then they gird themselves for what has always been the December menace.
Were you surprised, Ed, that Patriots-Colts the other night, the play happens, and Belichick in a lot of circles getting heavy criticism, obviously from Randy and a lot of people around the nation. You call up a man, Barry Switzer, who was involved in a very famous 4th-and-1 play from his own 29. I guess it was 1995, and I think you were a beat writer for the morning news at the time. What did Switzer tell you, and were you surprised at what he told you?
Well, I called Barry because I figured he had not only done a very similar thing, and it was also characterized as being foolish. And here we had a guy who's regarded as one of the great geniuses in football history making a very similar decision. So, yeah, I called Barry Switzer, and, you know, he said that in his mind it was two totally different things, that the Cowboys had just fourth and 3 inches, and that if you can't get 3 inches, you don't deserve to win the game. He said had it been fourth and two, that he would have kicked the ball. So he disagrees with what Belichick did, even though he, you know, authorized similar strategy on a cold, windy Philadelphia day. And he said at the time that Aikman was for it, Emmett Smith was for it, Michael Irvin, they were all urging him to go for it. And, of course, they ran a play that was stopped to Emmett Smith, and the two-minute warning had been called, and so they got a second chance, and everybody at the game assumed Switzer then would send out the punt team. He declined to do so, and he said he had no choice, and at that point he was already committed, and he couldn't change his mind and have the team still think he believed in them, and so he sent them back out there. They ran the same play with the same result and ultimately lost the game. But, you know, his situation was involved more risk, if you ask me, because even had they succeeded, they still wouldn't have won the game like the Patriots would have the other night. The Patriots had the lead. The Cowboys were tied. Even if they convert, they're still not in position to score the decisive points in the game, whereas New England already had enough points to win the game if they execute the fourth down play.
How much profanity did Switzer use during this interview, and how much did the SOB quote in your column, was that actually an SOB that he said?
I believe he used the long form, derivative of that. There may have been a few other places where I applied a little cleansing, but because I know he's sensitive to that. It's not necessary to make his point, but there was a little profanity involved, but hey, that's Barry. That's part of Barry being Barry, and made him, you know, he still is an interesting a story as ever. He started thinking I had called him about Bob Stoops going to Notre Dame. He thought that was a story everybody was chasing. And he said that Bob Stoops is not going to Notre Dame. Why would he go there? He's making $4 million Norman. You know, at Notre Dame, it's like Jerry with the Cowboys. They think he ought to be honored to coach there and work for less. And Stoops isn't going to do that. So, but Barry did say that he could do the job at Notre Dame running the wishbone, and that Navy had proved it could still be successful. And if Navy could win doing it, you can bet Switzer could win doing it.
All right. Ed Werner, I think I understood all that. Thanks, man.
Did it get a little lengthy?
No, it's okay. And you can read Ed's work on ESPNDallas.com right now. Great column today by Ed.
It sure was. I read that. All right. Thanks, Ed Werder.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Talk to you, the great Ed Werder. Did I ask him? I forgot to ask him who his sources were. He was going to name them today. His Valley Ranch sources.
I just want to know where Jimmy Hoffa's buried.
Oh, here we go. Well, we're coming right back with that. After 3 decades of being missing, Jimmy Hoffa was found Saturday night. Tell you where, coming up.